Brian, apparently the possibility has arisen of playing games in NBA games without fans in the arena just to be safe because of coronavirus. Have you thought about what that might be like?
Who?
Or,
Who?
Who what?
Who what? We play games without the fans?
Yeah.
No, it's impossible. I ain't playing. That's what I play for. Like, my teammates play for me. I play for the fans. That's what it's all about. So if I show up to an arena and ain't no fans in there, I ain't playing. So they can do what they want to do.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ron.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to League Pass and Chill, brought to you by Podcast, the word which we discuss is outside. Ted, do you know where that word comes from?
Podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to guess.
So we're on one. Hello. Welcome.
Yes.
iPod and broadcast.
Huh.
They combine the
yeah,
two.
Yeah.
Podcast.
Yeah. And now I get them off Spotify.
Yes. You get them everywhere. I'm Olga Nulich. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. I'm joined by two of the team today, Ted Smith.
Yes.
And Harrison Pullinger.
G'day.
Naturally, I think we're going to start talking about the issue that's not just a sports issue and it is impacting the NBA, but it is obviously global, which is the coronavirus, which is affecting everybody, including our office, because a person from our office got the coronavirus. And do we know if that, did that person come in or?
No, so they said that they saw the person that got the virus or gave them the virus on Tuesday.
Yeah.
But the email said that they hadn't, the person that works for FSA hadn't been in the office since
contracting it.
Yeah, since that Tuesday. But I got that email on Saturday or Sunday and I was like, how are they paying rent if they haven't been here since Tuesday?
Yeah, and no rosters work like that, is it?
Yeah, it's affecting everybody. Yeah. Don't cough.
Yeah.
and in the NBA, obviously, they've been taking precautions. So initially, we told you guys last week that it was for players not to high-five fans, not to do autographs anymore. Now it's to do with the media. They're saying that the media shouldn't be in locker rooms. I think they're implementing that on Wednesday. And when they do interviews outside the locker room, they have to keep a 6 to 8 feet barrier between themselves and the player.
Who is there going to be someone that'll be constantly taking, like,
regulating that?
Yeah, like, or just strong estimates.
Well, that's the thing. It's a weird
six
regulation.
6 to 8 feet. Is that the
6 to 8 feet is the, so that's right. What, like 2 to 3 meters, right?
Yeah.
Which is like the distance that you and I are at right now.
So it's just like double the normal personal space.
Pretty much.
Your normal amount of personal space, double it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All of that after a game where obviously you're playing against other guys, sweating amongst
them. All over
them.
Each other. Such a sweaty game.
The sweatiest game.
Yeah.
Among the sweatiest. And then obviously around fans who are just always there and pretty close to you. And so do you think that's the next step then? Because we've seen it in Italy. Italy, it was originally fanless games. They're cancelling Champions League games. And now it's just cancelling the games altogether.
Sports in Italy.
Right. And So obviously in the US, the coronavirus is something that's growing. They haven't tested that many people, but we're assuming that there's a lot of cases out there. Do you think it's inevitable that they're just going to either do fanless games or cancel the games?
The Italy scenario is a good case study. It's happened so quickly, right? Like it was like, what, a week and a half ago where I first caught wind that they were going to play to crowdless games. It's like that's groundbreaking. Then no sports for a month. They've cancelled everything for a month. And now that country is in complete lockdown as well. It'll be interesting to see what the countries around Italy do. I know Spain has had a high infection rate.
Yeah.
If they follow suit, then it's going to look like a domino effect in terms of everyone will eventually do what Italy is currently doing. I think if it continues to spread, that is the most logical outcome to me from what I've seen.
So Italy didn't take it seriously to start off with, and obviously it's ballooned into what it has.
Well, they thought they could pray it away.
I mean, they've got the Pope. Like, he's right there.
That's what they thought. That's what I was telling themselves.
Yeah, wrong. The US hasn't taken it seriously to start off, and now it's obviously becoming a thing. You know, you got like senators being...
Trumpito. Two of Trumpito's...
Four of them now.
Four of them. Okay, and they've been in contact with Donald.
Including...
I'm not going to say anything more than that.
I'm going to say... no, I will say, Matt Gaetz is a dude from Florida. He rocked up to the house wearing like a big old mask, making fun of it, and all of a sudden he comes into contact with someone who's contracted it.
Yeah.
It's like, my guy.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Karma Corona. That's good. Oh, it's not good. It's the opposite of that. But correct. That's ironic and funny, that last one.
Correct.
Save.
So to end the coronavirus segment on a light note.
That would have, if you could do that, bro.
No, you can't. But Ted, what's your sort of, I know you wanted to get into this. What's your favorite take from the whole coronavirus situation, near pandemic that we're in?
Just the potential benefit. No, I'm joking. it is interesting. Someone that is skeptical of mainstream news, I was late to the game in terms of taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And as you guys know me now, I'm taking it all the way to the other extreme. I don't want to come to work anymore.
That's a very real possibility as far as it being implemented.
But, you know, I think, you know, just my thoughts on it, don't live your life in fear. Keep doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm just going to wash my hands heaps more. If I get sick, I'll stay at home, eat soup, and hope for the best.
I think that's me as well.
100%. And like, as bad as this is, and you look at the news and it's horrible, and man, the flights are cheap. Yeah. Flights are real cheap.
Oh, bro, I went for a swim this morning, athletic flex. And the pool was almost empty, dude. And I was like, go get used to this.
Man, and look, to be honest, again, for everyone out there, wash your hands, two happy birthdays, whatever. We might have to work from home soon, and I don't hate that because I hate traffic.
Yeah, I mean, on the record, oh no. we are making light of it at the moment, but we're three mates sharing some banter. It is semi-serious, and, you know, like we said, we are taking precautions, and I think that's the way forward, right? But don't stop talking to your Chinese friends and shit. Like,
that's trash.
Yeah, let's not overreact. Let's rein it in. Says the Asian. Please keep talking. yeah, but bring it back to basketball, it'll be super interesting to see what happens because if the NBA stops, then the chat around the Olympics is it being canned is.
That's very legitimate.
Oh, it's going to heat up.
Yeah.
And if players start pulling out of the Olympics.
That's it right there. Man. As soon as they start losing star power, the question is, what's the point?
Yeah.
And so that's what, like, off the top, I think you guys would have heard a LeBron James quote. That's what he said. If there are no fans, he ain't playing.
Yeah.
And then if there are no fans, do you think that, and I've thrown this out on Twitter, do you think there's an asterisk next to the champion? If it's fanless games, because what the hell does home court advantage mean if there are no fans?
I mean, see, I don't. I still think there are advantages of playing in the city that you live in. But, and no, you can't put an asterisk next to the team that won when you remove all other obstacles. I think that's pretty cool to be the team that won the championship in a fanless game.
Yeah.
It would be a really, there'd be something really pure about watching
that. That's the basketball purist right there.
It really would be.
You, like, there's no crowd yelling. There's nothing. There's nothing which interferes in the basketball. That'd be great.
That's going to be awesome. And like, to bring this back to politics super quickly, but only for like a second, they might have debates, like presidential debates without a crowd, which is awesome because then you won't see pandering to a crowd. You'll see substance.
Scott Bull and Bernie.
And so I think that's the same thing with basketball. You're just going to get this pure product and that's going to be really fun to absorb.
Yeah. The interactions between the opposing teams will be interesting to see if like get a bit more chippy.
Yeah.
It'll be
a practice, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
If it happens, hopefully it doesn't get to that point, but it just seems inevitable. Now, onto some more news, which was probably the biggest news of the week outside the potential pandemic, which is... Kenny Atkinson and the Brooklyn Nets mutually parted ways. That's the official word.
No one mutually gets sacked.
Especially from a situation that he almost didn't put a step wrong.
It was promising this time last year.
Totally. But also the team did bring in Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. And I feel like we mentioned something like this, that those two guys are so volatile that something was going to happen there. I didn't think it'd be this, and I didn't think it'd be this quick because the Nets have been okay this season.
I've been critical of KD a few times, but if you look at his track record with coaches, he hasn't given them much grief. Whereas Kyrie, he's been a nuisance in almost every locker room that he's been in. I assume he was in at the Cavs, but that was kept under wraps because they had LeBron James running the show. And it's obvious to me that that's why Atkins has been sacked, because of Kyrie Irving. If he doesn't get picked up In the off-season, I think he's still got a job, and they're a team that would probably be improving. In that scenario, they still have D'Lo, obviously. But, yeah, oh, I think he's – we're just talking about another virus.
Well done. Good on you.
That's full circle humour.
So the thing with Kenny Atkinson, right, is that he took this Nets team from a rebuild, turned D'Lo into an all-star practically, and led them to a playoffs that they probably shouldn't have been in.
And just to not skate over the fact that he took this team from a rebuild, 3 years it took him from the worst team in the league with absolutely no draft capital because it was all in Boston to a playoff team.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just a rebuild. Like, he retooled and then they took off. And what they, you know, the Brooklyn Nets clearly liked Kenny Atkinson, what he was doing. 11 months ago, they gave him a two-year extension. They gave his whole staff a two-year extension. And then you bring in Kyrie Irving. And since this news has broken, we've heard two things which has really, really pissed me off. Number one is an unnamed source said Kenny Atkinson not starting DeAndre Jordan was going to be a problem. Man. Why? Jared Allen is younger, more athletic, and better.
Just better.
And is shooting threes. DeAndre Jordan can't do any of those things.
Yep.
And the fact that that could be a problem annoyed me. And then secondly, Kyrie Irving has now come out and said he wants Tyronn Lue to be the next head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Like, you say it's not that, like, it's obvious to us, but it hasn't broken that it was Kyrie Irving that caused his departure. But that, to me, makes it pretty damn clear.
The fact that he's already got another name locked and loaded. Yeah. As soon as the coach is sacked, he's like, I've got a suggestion. That's the problem when you bring in Kyrie Irving, right? Is that all of a sudden he's trying to make front office decisions for your team. He thinks he has that kind of clout because of that one shot in the finals. They're going to make the playoffs, the Nets.
Yeah.
In a similar seed to what they did last year. And the majority of their cap isn't on the court when you talk about KD. Kyrie's played, what, if it's more than 20 games, it's not much more.
He's not going to play again either with that shoulder injury out for the season.
And the Nets are better for it because their winning percentage is a bit better without Kyrie in comparison to when he's there. It's just, at the end of the day, it's just a shame for Kenny Atkins because I liked what he did last year and I like how he reacted to bringing in those two stars. But, you know, that's what happens when you're dealing with mega egos.
So they'll have Jacques Vaughn for the rest of the season as their interim head coach. He was at the Magic before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a knock on Sean Marks' record? Because he was in San Antonio, did a really good job there, came over to Brooklyn. Somehow, it was him and Kenny Atkinson together turned this organization around from the shit show that the Celtics trade left them. And so is this a knock on him? Because I get it. He brought in Kyrie Irving so we can bring in Kevin Durant, right? And I get it. Bring in as much talent as you can, you increase your chances of winning. That is what it is. But you knew what you were getting in Kyrie in this sort of like this quote-unquote coach killer. And so you've built this awesome culture around this coach who is really well respected, and you're going to throw that away in order to bring in two really volatile superstars, or at least one volatile superstar and one volatile star and offensive star in Kyrie Irving. Is that a knock on Sean Marks?
It absolutely is. And the most important thing is what you said in that last sentence is one superstar and one star, I guess. Like, why is the front office pampering to maybe a tier three guy?
Is he that much better than Spencer? And we've had this
That's
conversation before.
Say.
Yeah.
Is he so much better that you will give up a really quality head coach in Kenny Atkinson? And we've seen with the Sixers, it's hard to get a quality head coach around really, really good players.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is that worth it?
No, it's absolutely not worth it. Why the top, that top tier of guys, your KD, LeBron, Giannis, Kawhi, Steph. That group there, that's who you make coaching changes for because they're the guys that can win a championship almost on their own. We saw Kawhi do that in a really good system, but almost on his own.
Yep.
And that second tier, you can question it if you don't love the coach, but third tier, Kyrie Irvings of the world, what are we doing?
Yep.
How are we throwing away a guy who had the full support of the organization for him?
The one thing I will say, just to play devil's advocate, this time last year we were going hard at Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka. You know, what are they doing?
Yep.
Our front office in shambles. But we've forgotten about it because this year all they've been doing is winning. So I think they'll hold off from making any other front office changes. So Yeah, I will wait to hold off hold judgment until next year to see what they look like with a KD and Kyrie on the court, because, you know, a month of winning can change our perspective on a front office.
I'd go back at that and say, I get it. KD, LeBron, you can make that comp. Kyrie's not AD, and whether it's Ty Lue or Mark Jackson, that person's not Frank Vogel. As just from like a good system coach, a good defensive coach, I think there's a lot more structure in a team with LeBron James and Frank Vogel and AD than there is one that has Kyrie Irving in it.
A fit KD is another dude that's in the chat for best on the planet. When he's in there, he's right there. A fit KD.
Totally.
He's with LeBron, he's with Giannis, he's with Kawhi Leonard. So, you know, a fit KD in the East with Kyrie, I'm not going to rule out the chance that they can do stuff, man. I think the Celtics this year would be a bigger surprise in comparison to if that happened next year.
Yeah, and, you know, we are saying all of this, and we can't feel too bad for Kenny Atkinson. He's going to end up in a really good situation. He's going to get a job.
Where would you like him to land while we're on him?
I've got the Knicks. I think everything that he does and everything that he is fits really well with the Knicks. He started his career in the Knicks as well. He's a New Yorker through and through. But when I was looking at him coming, I've got Frank Kitalina, Mitch Robinson and Kevin Knox. Essentially, their invested future, what do they have in common? They're all super long and they're all super athletic.
What about RJ Barrett?
Not done yet. I'll get to him in a second. Kenny Atkinson with the Nets last year ran lineups of Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, Jared Allen. One of them is a good defender. The rest are actually net negative. Not even net zero, net negative. So what he could do in a zone-like situation with Frank, Mitch Robinson, Kevin Knox, I think that could be really exciting, and it could be Toronto Raptors defense level exciting, because they're all very athletic and they all like playing defense.
So just the negative to that is, are those guys good enough shooters to work in that sort of system, to all play together? I think of Frank, I think Kevin Knox. Like, these are names that, like, they're cool. Like, defensively, I see the potential.
And there are people around the league which call Kenny the point guard whisperer.
Yeah.
And you look at the guys that he's worked with. He started his career in New York, which I said, with Stephen Marbury. He then had Raymond Felton for the best years of Raymond Felton's career, which was only the 3 years he played in New York. He had Chauncey Billups, one of the best point guard veteran leaders in the NBA that has been there in my lifetime. He then worked with Jeff Teague in his All-Star season and then took D'Angelo Russell to an All-Star level and Spencer Dinwiddie to a Sixth Man of the Year contender.
It's a nice resume.
You're saying you can't do anything with...
Send him to the Cavs. Friends? He's got 2 point guards there.
Well, that's one of the teams that Harrison's written down here is, you know, in our little rundown of the potential landing spots. And again, if you're Sean Marks, you've just given up this really quality head coach to send him to like another Eastern Conference team. Whether it's the Knicks, the Cavs, or the Bulls as one of these options too.
Yeah. I guess Lou might get this job, right?
It sounds like, from everything that's being said, it just sounds like that's quite likely.
Yeah. So, you know, another team's going to get a point guard whisperer while the Nets are going to have to look for a Kyrie whisperer.
I like your point though, Ted. Send him to Cleveland. Like, he's got Garland, he's got Colin Sexton, he's got Exum. He's going to have a field day with those guys.
Yeah. And the bigs can look after himself because they've got a shitload of them.
Yeah, my only issue with that would be...
Do you hate the Cavs and those point guards?
Yes, but point guards, okay.
Just the two little combos they got over there.
Is we've now seen him with stars or people who think they're stars, and you're going to put him in a situation with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson?
I think Kevin Love gets a bad rap.
I agree. Kevin Love did like one bad thing in a game. Like, he threw a pass really hard at Jetty Osman.
But he's very, very clearly so unhappy.
Yeah.
And he's very, very clearly unhappy in Cleveland.
He's been vocal about his fights with depression and mental illness. So, yeah, he is unhappy, but he's working through it. Let's not hold that against him.
But also, Matthew Dellavedova did a nice tweet about him yesterday.
About Kevin Love?
Yeah. The little Instagram post with Kevin Love.
I don't know how that...
That's earth moving.
I don't know how that didn't blip on my radar.
I know. A Delly tweet, that's earth moving.
This after Delly had like 14 assists, new career high.
Mm-hmm. Nice, Delly.
Yeah. It's been a big week for Australians.
Absolutely.
We're going to speak about that later, actually. Aaron Baines has gone absolutely off, which is so much fun because what the hell? But first, speaking about coaches, Tim Duncan served as head coach for the first game of his career. He's been on the assistant coaching bench for Greg Popovich. Popovich had to go, had some personal issues to deal with. In goes Tim Duncan, gets a win. It's not his win technically, it's still Pop's win, but it's a nice little victory for him nonetheless. Should Becky Hammond feel slighted? Because she's been in that coaching staff for a good while.
Yeah, man. Yeah, she should. And the quotes that have come out have actually really annoyed me. So Pop said, and this was all he said about letting Duncan take over instead of Becky Hammond, we aren't trying to make history.
Well, okay, I heard that he'd scouted against Charlotte.
Becky Hammond has been the lead assistant, is the lead assistant, and for the last 6 years has worked under Pop. She scouted Charlotte.
Hey, man, I didn't put Duncan in. Stop. you're going to like Patty Mills' response. Did you hear what he said?
What did he say?
He said he didn't do anything.
Yeah, that makes me happy. That makes me very happy. But then Duncan came out and was like, oh, we just don't want her first start to be a technicality. Bro, your first start was a technicality. No one cried about that.
You know what? There's something about... the idea is that we shouldn't talk about her gender when talking about how good she is from a coaching standpoint, right?
But here we go.
But by saying that, they're completely just using her gender as a way to dismiss what could have been, right?
Absolutely. And when you say, let's not talk about gender, the locker room guys, they know that. They all respect her for the player that she was. I went back to 2015 when she first got that job with the Spurs and Pop gave her the Summer League team to coach and they won the Summer League.
There's some really good vision out of that too.
Really good vision. Jonathan Simmons, she's a player's coach. Guys love to play for a player's coach. Kyle Anderson, she got our guys ready to play. We learned a very difficult system and got it down pat in a few days. If you have mothers or grandmothers around you, you're used to hearing a woman's voice. You take heed in what they tell you. What's the difference?
It's a good quote.
Yeah.
Pau Gasol then came out and wrote an open letter for Sports Illustrated about female coaches and about the respect he has and the rest of the team have for Becky Hammond because there are things that she notices, especially in a pick-and-roll situation. For those who don't know much about her playing career, she was a guard and a really bloody good guard at that. He's saying that he was working with DeJounte Murray on pick-and-roll situations. James Borrego, who we spoke about last week, is a really good coach. She came up while they were working out being like, no, here are things that you guys need to work on to get this pick and roll happening. And you got a bunch of Pop's assistants who are all lining up to be head coaches of teams every single year. And she's the one going in there correcting little things that they're doing wrong, trying to make that better. And the fact that in a situation where she could have stepped up and she didn't get the chance to, I think that sucks.
So two things on that. Firstly, something that I mentioned really early on in our podcast is that women are generally more skilled because just in the same way that bigs generally aren't as skilled is because they rely on their size so much that they feel as though they don't need to work as much on, you know, different sorts of skills that they learn. Same as women where they're generally not as athletic as the men and so they have to big up their skill set a little bit more in order to compete at the highest level. So they're super skilled. So the idea of Becky Hammond being a genuine help to guys like DeJounte Murray is completely legitimate. The other thing is something that I've completely lost my train of thought.
We'll edit.
Yeah, we can edit this all out.
Fuck, what was my second part?
Talked about Summer League, Kyle Anderson, Pau Gasol's open letter.
Oh, yes. The other thing is that Pop's quote of her not wanting to make history, it sounds a lot like, no, we want her to make history in like a legitimate way. So again, it's completely like using her gender to make this decision. And look, I get it. They're up against James Borrego. So it's like Tim Duncan would have played under him, potentially. And Becky Hammond would have coached alongside him. So it's like, if what you're saying is right, that Tim Duncan did the scout,
yeah,
then sure. It just sounds like a weird cop-out in like a reverse way.
Yeah. It sounds like the general audience, general fan, probably doesn't give NBA players enough credit. It sounds like they're ready for a female coach, right?
I feel like
resoundingly.
If it happened, it would have been a news cycle for a day and we would have got over it. And I think that's a good sign of growth, which is just like, oh, yeah, like, of course. Like, she's very good at this. She just did it. But we didn't get that chance.
And I think the other thing that the NBA is very progressive with this and I don't...
With everything.
Yeah, and I don't want to say too much that, you know, they're amazing because there are no women in these kind of positions, but you look, there have been female analysts Like, everyone around this table absolutely love Doris Burke.
You love her so much.
And what she brings to a game as a colour commentator. Rachel Nichols, the way she interviews people. Is there a better interviewer in
maybe
the NBA
Jackie
right
McMullen.
Now?
Like, you know.
Maybe Jackie McMullen. Yeah. And then, like, above all of this is Cheryl Miller still comes in and out of NBA conversations all the time. NBA fans
actually
had seen this.
I never thought of that. The fact that probably the best interviewer is either Rachel Nichols or Jackie McMullen. The best sideline reporter is probably Lisa Salters. And the best color commentator in the league is probably Doris Burke.
Yeah.
So this league is like run by women.
Yeah.
Yet for some reason we want to tiptoe around the first women head coach as though that matters who the first one's going to be, because it seems inevitable that there's going to be a lot.
And a lot of the superstars are progressive.
Yeah.
Like Kobe, before he passed, was a big, obviously we all know now, a big supporter of the WNBA. Dwayne Wade's recently come out in support of his transgender daughter.
Yeah.
You know, like I said before or alluded to, I don't think we give NBA players enough credit. I think from the stuff that Harrison just brought up, it's quite clear that the players are mature enough to handle a good coach, whether she's female or male. They just want to get coached up.
Yeah. Let's move on to the other sort of big storyline this week. And it's actually quite cool. We're in March and there are a lot of big storylines. And one of them is the LeBron versus Giannis MVP conversation, which is being really kind of, it's being brought to the fore by the media.
It's taken a right angle turn,
it's,
from my opinion.
I think it's a very weird turn because I don't think it's completely legitimate.
Rapid.
But it's just it's by nature of the schedule. So the Lakers had the Bucks. Lakers won. Big win from them, right? Giannis was healthy for most of that game.
One out of 82 games.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's going to decide the MVP.
Right. And then the Lakers went and beat the Clippers, right? So that allows us to extend that news cycle.
For the first time this season.
Right. It allows us to extend the news cycle a little bit longer. And look, LeBron is doing some really special things for his age. The Bucks are doing something that...
Not even for his age, man. He's doing some special things in the NBA.
For a human.
Yeah. Right?
He's doing a really great job. The Lakers are the best team in the West. Again,
he'd be the oldest person to have the most assists for the first time.
Mm.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So you have that going on. But then, of course, there is Giannis, who, again, their schedule wasn't exciting this week other than that Lakers game. And so you have Giannis, who's performing at a level that we really haven't seen historically for a team that is one of maybe the top five of all time. At least from a numbers and probably a record standpoint, when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
You know, what do we make of like this sudden urge to focus on LeBron versus Giannis now, when it seems as though it is Giannis?
Well, I mean, we had this in our Burning Questions article, Oggs.
Yeah.
Is no one in the history of sport has been able to manipulate the media the way LeBron James has throughout his whole career, going back from high school, and whether his play style was up to the standard that it is currently, is he is able to push his story, push his narrative, and push this washed king storyline to the complete limit, where right now we're looking at it going, Giannis is probably one of the highest PERs in NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
His team is closing in the highest.
Yep.
His team is closing in on 70 wins.
Mm-hmm.
He is averaging absurd numbers. What are we at, 30 and 14?
I think even more than that from a rebounds perspective. And I don't know if the Bucks can get to 70 wins because they lost to the Nuggets today.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a Giannis-less, Middleton-less, Lopez-less.
It's like DiVincenzo. 68 wins.
They rested DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
Like,
all right. So let's look at, they're aiming at 68, 69 wins, which is still historic.
Totally.
That still puts you in the top five team performances ever.
Completely.
Giannis is one of the best defensive players on the court. Whenever he plays, he will be in line for the defensive player of the year, mm-hmm. as well as the MVP. And yet the fact that we're even talking about LeBron tends to say that his narrative and LeBron's manipulation of the media has worked.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so good at it. And now he has the LA market behind him too.
Yeah.
I'd love to see what the odds for Giannis winning MVP were 2 weeks ago. I imagine they would have been freakishly short.
Like $1.10 maybe? Even.
I'd say $1.30 or something, like, yeah. but really, really short. And then those two games, the Bucks win and the Clippers win for LeBron. Like, I was watching a show on ESPN this morning, watch Fox Sports. there was a talking head saying that the race is over that LeBron James is going to win the MVP.
Who said that?
Tony Kornheiser, who...
is it bad that I don't know who that is?
No, it's okay. He's a dude that works with Michael Wilborn, who...
Yeah, okay. Oh, yes, I do. I know who that is.
Yeah,
yes. Bold guy.
Yeah, Jewish dude, loud. Yeah, he's good at his job because he's meant to take hot takes, and that's what that is.
Yeah.
He, you know, conveniently, they didn't spit the numbers because... Giannis is per 36 is off the chain. It's off the charts, man.
He's playing 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Because the Bucks are so good, because he makes the Bucks so good.
Yeah, we rattled off their double-digit wins last week. It's very impressive. But I think the one thing that's going to hurt Giannis now, the fact that this LeBron chat has spiced up, he didn't play today. He's carrying a bit of a niggle. If you're the Bucks front office, your priority isn't his MVP race. It could be to shut him down for a week or two to make sure he's primed for the finals, because the number one spot is basically locked up.
I think the front office know that. They're not chasing his MVP, whether he wants it or not, which, judging by everything we know about Giannis, I don't think he cares that much about the MVP this season.
Like, he's a competitor?
You're not about to cost him getting injured, you not making the conference finals, and risk losing him in 2021.
I'm pretty sure he said last year that he'd rather win the basketball world championships with Greece than win the MVP for the NBA, which sums it all up. And to feed into what you were saying before about LeBron narrative and controlling the media, Bill Russell, 5 MVPs, Michael Jordan, 5 MVPs, LeBron James currently 4. I can see him retiring with 5 MVPs, like those other two lords, and this is the year that it's most likely going to happen, if it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, 36, surely he when he turns 36, he takes a bit of a slide, I imagine.
Man, we've been doing that since he was 32.
Yeah.
Look, there's also something about the Kobe tragedy that makes a 5th MVP and a potential championship at the Lakers romantic, right? There's a romanticization there that we can't escape. There's also the case of, we're in March, and outside of the coronavirus stuff, there's really not much else that we can talk about other than a playoff race that we're not going to talk about for the next month, right? And so this could just be not even LeBron-led, but just the media saying, shit, we need something to talk about, and this is semi-legitimate. So this gives us sort of fodder for the next 2 weeks until we get back into, okay, who's going to get that 8th seed? Because that's kind of boring to the casual fan. But LeBron versus Giannis is something that's very easy to grasp. It's a horse race.
Well, one more thing. I think it was this time last week where Giannis said LeBron's still in the top 3 best players in the world. I think LeBron saw that and was like, okay, I'm playing you first, as in Giannis, and then I'm playing Kawhi. Let's see who the best out of those 3.
And, like, credit to him, I think he won both of those matchups.
Yeah.
As in, like, his team
won. In the fourth quarter he did.
And I think individually he did too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watching LeBron defend Kawhi.
It's fun, huh?
In the fourth quarter of that game made you go, what?
Yeah.
This is a guy who hasn't played defense for 2 years.
It was nostalgic.
And yet, man, he's moving his feet. He's blocking everything. And I think the Clippers did as much as they could to throw away that game in the fourth quarter. But you can't take that away from LeBron locking Kawhi down. I think he had, with 5 minutes left, he only had 20 points.
And also, LeBron taking Kawhi off the dribble, just in with the ease that he did and getting these and ones at the rim, he made Kawhi look very human.
I wrote a couple of notes about that because I was watching the end of the game and
It was the coverage, right? They were trying to ice it or whatever they call it, whatever they're going to call it.
It happened the same way every time. It was whoever was defending Lou Williams comes up, sets a screen, they switch because everyone in the NBA switches now. We can't, God forbid, defend anyone. and then, like, while Lou Williams is trying to recover back to his man, like, Kawhi's, like, stuck in the middle trying to defend both. And because so many passes, I think LeBron threw a pass over to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope before Lou Will could get back there. He knocks one down with 5 minutes to go. And then with 4 minutes to go, LeBron got the switch, hits Avery Bradley on the wing, who hit another 3. That's pretty hard to make up that ground when you have to keep accounting for the fact that Luke Williams can't defend. And on the other end, instead of going at your Kyle Kuzma's and your Rajon Rondo's, Kawhi was trying to play one-on-one against LeBron. It didn't work.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Paul George wasn't doing enough to help Kawhi.
Not the end of the game, no.
No. The Lakers, I know you said they hit that three late in the game, but the Lakers were pretty bad from three for that game.
Mm.
Against actually both the Bucks and the Clippers, they sucked from three. You think about most teams in the NBA, if you suck from three, you're pretty much done, right? But they get to the line still, man. AD's been taking a bunch of free throws. So, you know, they can beat you in other ways where most teams either depend on their star or depend on their three-point shooting. Obviously, Lakers still depend on their stars, but like, what other teams are depending on free throws in 2020?
I think the beauty of LeBron, which feeds into that point if they get to the line, is anytime you put LeBron in a screen and roll situation, he will abuse the mismatch, whether that's bringing a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or an Avery Bradley across and trying to abuse Lou Will like he did against the Clippers, or whether it's bringing Anthony Davis up and then attacking the big man. Either way, he's getting to the rack or getting to the free throw line. Because he's throwing it up to Anthony Davis, who, what are you going to do? He's long and he's 7 foot tall and athletic. He's going to get to the line. LeBron is just, like, as soon as he gets that little bit of separation, you have to foul him.
Yeah.
And I think it'll come down to what we've been talking about for the entire season, which is, can they do that in May and June? Because they haven't had any rest.
Mm.
And so it's getting to the line takes a toll on your body. Playing the sort of D that they played over these last two games takes a real toll on your body. And LeBron James is 35. And so will he be able to do that come the postseason? I know playoff LeBron's a different beast, but will he be in a physical position to do that? Same with AD. And it's the sort of thing where I don't know how much you can rely on, if those two are fatigued in any way, how much you can rely on an Avery Bradley three-pointer or a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope three-pointer, or Rajon Rondo doing anything on the offensive end.
Yeah.
It scares me because of how inconsistent they are, that there's no rest coming from these guys, and I'm sort of coming around to where you were coming from at the start of the season, Harrison.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a Lakers fan, I don't want to admit that it's good yet, coming from you there, because right now...
I'm cautious.
Yeah, like you compare the offense of the Lakers down the stretch and the offense of the Clippers, stark contrast.
Not just the offense, the health. I think it's interesting that you're worried about the Lakers' two stars. I'd be worried about the Clippers' two stars and their health.
Yeah.
Paul George is more bandaged than man. And and Kawhi, everyone says load management. It's to limit the risk of injury again, because he hobbled through that final series last year. He was still effective because he's one of the best players in the universe with elite drive in terms of determination. Like he willed himself through that final series last year and still dominated, but I'd be more worried about their big guns limping through the playoffs again in comparison. LeBron, yeah, he got injured last year, but that was an actual injury. In terms of fatigue, he's got more help than he did at Cleveland. I know he's 35, but he is obviously a freak.
Yeah.
Right, he's obviously a freak.
Do you think those Clippers injuries, as we can talk about them a little bit now, do you think that's going to be their downfall at the end of the day? So they had a 6-game winning streak going into that game against the Lakers. They did show glimpses against the Lakers. They were completely healthy for that game. They have shown, like you said, a propensity for those top two guys especially to be injured, right?
For sure it's a concern, but I think if they do have a downfall, it's going to be the fact that their two stars aren't as good as the other two stars in that building.
Yeah.
And the other one is that they had, how many wins did they have last year? High 40s? Like they just
snuck into the playoffs.
Yes, but they had a good team last year. The hope was that they were going to mesh with these two new superstars. They're starting to. They had a 6-game win streak through last week and the week before. But yeah, that'd be my question. If they can all gel together, maybe the team can beat the Lakers, but the downfall, I'd say, is that they don't have the most talent out there when it comes to the top end, and the bench and the other role players haven't gelled with their stars as much as they would have liked to by now.
So to that point, tiny story, and I was told I shouldn't tell this story, but it's been so long now, I can't. I had a friend who was very close to Jerry West, as in close proximity-wise.
Okay.
When Kawhi Leonard signed,
Corona range or outside of Corona range?
Probably within like the new Corona range.
Okay.
And so like 6 to 8 feet.
Yep.
And as soon as that was announced, right, Kawhi Leonard is going to LA, Paul George is being traded there too. Jerry West was on the phone, this is according to my friend who overheard him, and he said to whomever was on the other end, I just got the two best plays in LA. Okay. This is knowing that obviously LeBron and AD are in the Lakers. And so do you think that's still the case? Do you think that was the case at that time? And or do you think it's the case now?
Hard to say now, but I mean, I would still rather Kawhi than AD.
Yeah.
So whether you're for LeBron or whether you're for Kawhi, that's up to you. Watching the game the other day, there are things in LeBron's game which I just don't think Kawhi has yet, and that is while his playmaking's increased, he's nowhere near the playmaker LeBron is, and he's not going to be by the finals. So if you go LeBron 1, Kawhi 2, AD 3, PG's bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
And, like, comfortably bottom of the pile.
This year's PG. Well, people were forgetting that he was probably third in MVP rate race last year.
Mm.
But he's spluttered since he got to the Clippers, I think.
It's like he had that shoulder injury, obviously.
Another one, yeah.
But to your point, Harrison, and to yours as well, Ted, you'd rather LeBron over Kawhi right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd rather AD over Paul George right now.
And I think, like, yeah, LeBron then Kawhi when you're ranking these players and then AD. But in terms of considering that the Lakers got AD last year and they wanted Kawhi, if you could pick one of those two players to partner up with LeBron, I think AD probably suits LeBron better than Kawhi. You might have a situation that you got in the Clippers now where, you know, I find when I watch it, Kawhi and Paul George kind of take turns sometimes.
Even though the ball should be in Lou Williams' hands?
Yeah.
It's a weird situation.
Yeah. Lakers, they got some pretty good players.
It's good from you, Ted. Before we go, we do have to shout out Aaron Baines, who dropped 37 points earlier this week. That's a new career high for him.
Out of nowhere.
It's a new career high for him. It's a new Australian high in history. He had 9 three-pointers, which is unreal. 9 of 14 from downtown.
Including the filthy step back.
A little step back on Dame. He followed that up with another double-double where he had, I think, 24 and something. He only had two games this week. He had 30 points. He averaged 30 points this week. Didn't win player of the week. LeBron won it, which, sure, we've spoken about him a lot. But, like, 30 points a game plus rebound. Like,
and your Aaron Baines.
Like, he's never
got to take that into consideration, right?
LeBron's going to win, like, a bunch more. Aaron Baines, like, he's not going to do that again.
Yeah.
But, no, big shout-out to him. And then the night after, Matthew Dellavedova, 14 assists, new career high for him. So out of a little slump that he's been on, it's really nice to see some Australians outside of Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons is obviously out with that back injury, doing really, really well. It bodes well for the Olympics.
Sucks. Should it happen. Ben, I was about to say,
I'm so
the
sorry. Olympics away. And, yeah, I guess that's just nice to see.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good on Baines.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. We had to end on that really nice note because we started on a pretty morbid note, I think. If you like what you heard, head to your favorite podcast app, like, rate, review, subscribe, all that jazz. Make sure to tune in next week. See ya.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.